rulers who amounted to anything in the ancient world surrounded themselves with an intellectual elite who would assist them. It's the same with any empire today. You have a technocratic elite who've got specialty skills, who are supposed to be helpful in warning you of danger, interpreting long-term trends and seeing opportunities that might arise. The skills change from age to age, and in this particular era we're thinking about this morning, astrology, weirdly enough, was an essential skill in terms of interpreting what was to happen, since people believed there was a link between what happened in the heavens and what happened in earthly affairs. And if we're trying to think about where these wise men may have came from, the most likely suspect is the Persian Empire, the great rival of the Romans in the East, with whom they waged wars continually for hundreds of years until the Muslims knocked them out. I was talking last Sunday about St. Basil the Great and St. Gregory Nazianzen when they were studying at the University of Athens. There was a man called Julian there who later became the emperor. He tried to knock Christianity off its perch and reimpose paganism throughout the Roman Empire. And he was a man of grand designs. He decided to knock the Persian Empire out too. And so he invaded them and got close to the capital city when the Sassanid heavy cavalry, a specialty of the Persian war machine, turned up and killed him, annihilated his legions and pushed the Romans back across the frontier in a humiliating defeat. So quite significant if members of the pagan intellectual elite of the Persian Empire had suddenly turned up in a Roman kind of domain looking for a significant messiah and leader. And there's really some really puzzling things about this story. First of all, King Herod the Great, the ruler in that time, ruled for about 30 or 40 years. He rebuilt the temple. A ruthless, clever man, but a quisling king. He was there because it suited the Romans to have him there. He would make sure there was peace in that area, the taxes would be collected, and he would be removed the moment he was not acting in the best interests of the Roman Empire. So why didn't he hand these Persian courtiers over or kill them on the spot? Well, I can understand from a real politic, clever, calculating point of view why he might have seen some reason to let them go on with their mission. But then what I'm really puzzled about is why didn't he send some assassins to quietly follow them and then eliminate this concealed messiah? Well, perhaps the motif of divine protection around the Holy Family, which is a strong concealed theme in the Gospel, is what comes into play here. The other puzzling feature of the story is that, of course, the arrival of Jesus in our world is an arrival in obscurity. He'll live out the first 30 years of his life with nobody really knowing much, apart from his parents, as to what this remarkable child's destiny is. So if these high-born special people turn up, doesn't that contradict all that? Particularly since Jesus was very clear that his mission was to Jews and not to Gentiles. Well, I guess to tell against that, you could say that these special people disappear immediately after they have contact with Jesus and are never heard of again. So what's the significance of this story? Where's it going to? The pagan intellectual elite had turned up at the cradle of Jesus at the start of his life. Well, last week I was talking about those remarkable people, St. Basil the Great, and St. Gregory Nazianzen, and even some of Benediction. I went on to talk about the third of these amazing Cappadocian fathers, St. Gregory of Nyssa, the brother of St. Basil the Great, these great brains of the patristic church. You know, the significance of them, that their parents had been first-generation Christians, and these guys were second-generation Christians, is that the Christian faith is so fresh and novel in the affairs of the Roman Empire. It was now gaining currency amongst the elite of Greco-Roman society. We'll probably never see leaders of the caliber of Basil the two Gregories again in the church's life. And the point is that 300 or 400 years on from the birth of Christ, the intellectual pagan elite of the Roman Empire has been captured by the gospel. And that's the significance of the Magi turning up, the pagan intellectual elite that come to worship Jesus and do him homage, have been the precursors and the portents of the much wider and deeper and more complex significance of Christ will become, reaching up beyond his earthly life and radiating in rippling circles to further capture the kind of treasures of the world. And more than that, I was saying, Major, I come from Persia, from the hinterlands of that amazing land. I was saying last week that the great contribution of Gregory Nazianzen was at the second great ecumenical council of Constantinople in 381. He persuaded the church of the full stature of the Holy Spirit, persuaded them that the doctrine of the Trinity wasn't some alternative intellectual model. It was the secret of the intimacy life of God. And about 40 years on at the Council of Chalcedon, the great controversies about how Christ could be both human and divine were finally resolved. Well, people thought they were, but a grumpy group called the Nestorians weren't happy, and they broke away. They were partly hacked off with the Roman Emperor. They lived on the margins of the empire. And so came to be the ancient Church of the East, a Nestorian church based in the Persian hinterlands. So now 400 years on from the arrival of the Magi, a flourishing Christian church, might be heterodox, is off there in the place from which the Magi came. And the significance of the ancient Church of the East is that for the next 1,000 years, it was the cutting edge of Christian evangelism and the further spread of the gospel. The Nestorian ancient Church of the East took the gospel to China, took it to India. When Francis Xavier turned up in the 16th century, the next great wave of Christian evangelizing, he found out there were sort of hints of the gospel already, a kind of remnant church there already. Funnily enough, when Christianity spread from the Roman Empire into Europe, into what we call Christendom, it kind of stopped for a long time. Remember when William Carey, the great Baptist missionary, proposed to take the gospel to India in the 18th century, got roundly told off by members of the Baptist Union. How dare you presuppose that the heathen should receive the joy of the gospel? And so, in a sense, the full significance of Christ and who he is still being unpacked, still being revealed. It needs wise people indeed to get to the bottom of who he is. You know, the great German theologian Karl Rahner said that since he's been born, Christ has begun to work his way into the deep structures of the world, and this is part of the unpacking and unraveling and deeper discovery of who he is as he makes his way through cultures and language groups and history and philosophy. Because, you know, the significance of Basil the Great and Gregory of Nazianzen is that the full revelation of who Christ was have now entered the world of Greek philosophy. Somebody said, what has Jerusalem got to do with Athens? Well, Jerusalem had to come to know Athens in order to explain who Jesus was into the wise meditations of the Greco-Roman world. And in struggling with the mystery of how Christ could be both divine and human, the very human understanding of what it is to be a human, the very understanding of the full expansion of character and personality revealed by him has revealed more about us and who and what we are. And so the three wise men, the Magi, they are pointers to this deeper discovery and the ability of the Christian faith, the Christ event, and the ministry of Jesus to work its way through time, through space, and through culture groups, and through language groups, and finally, 2,000 years later, to reach us at the bottom of the world, at the furthest expansion of a world that Jesus and the Persians and all the others would never have known about. It was just forests then, wasn't it? Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, Holy Spirit.